Hare Krishna. So, yesterday morning, we were talking about some topics in early 1973, and then we ended with a segment of Prabhupada arriving in an airplane in Los Angeles. So, I wanted to start today and kind of continue something else that happened in Los Angeles that was also very wonderful by Srila Prabhupada. I was expressing yesterday morning how I was struggling, even though I was with Srila Prabhupada, right with Srila Prabhupada, I was having difficulties and I was unhappy because I didn't see that I was experiencing the same ecstasy that everyone was experiencing seeing Srila Prabhupada. So then Prabhupada stayed in Los Angeles for some time there in 1973. And at that time, so a little after where I was talking about in Bombay, I had been with him for 8 months. And I had traveled around the world with Prabhupada already like 1.5 times and busy schedule. So for so many reasons, I guess I had become a little bit inattentive in what I was doing. So anyway, that Prabhupada had said so many nice things to me, but as the weeks wore on in Los Angeles, still I was having some problems. And I was sleeping too much. And a person who I had never ever slept after taking lunch, all of a sudden I was taking these naps after lunch. And sometimes they would turn into long naps. And one day I was in my quarters, the servants' quarters, in New Dwarka, and I heard the bell ring. And I'm not sure how long it had been ringing, but I heard it ringing. And I got up that day, and I must have been asleep for over an hour. And I must have had a lot of prasadam for lunch, because I was very, very in the modes of ignorance, tamagun, when I woke. Even I could feel my head, my face, my eyes. When I opened them up, they were just very heavy. But Prabhupada had rang the bell. So I ran into the room, of course, and I offered obeisances. And I offered, unlike what I normally do, I would pay my obeisances rather quickly and get up to see what he wanted. But I said them very slowly because I was trying to wake up as I was lying there because I didn't want him to see. As if I could hide it from my spiritual master. You know, I didn't want him to see that I was so much in the modes of ignorance. So I said it slowly, and I was trying to get my eyes to become full and open. And I sat up, and as soon as I looked at him, he just looked at me, and he said, "Why aren't you chanting your rounds?" And I was horrified, because I was having trouble completing my rounds. But again, I never thought that Prabhupada was paying attention or that he knew. Again, I couldn't understand. Maharaj, you have to sit up here. I couldn't understand. Prabhupada knew everything. He certainly knew everything about me. And I was with him for so long. He knew everything I was doing and not doing, and he accepted my service still. So when he said that, I became very startled and, of course, very embarrassed and ashamed. And I didn't know what to say. And again, my usual response was not to say anything, because anything you say would be really foolish. But instead, I said something really foolish. And I said, "Well, I'm not getting my rounds finished because I'm just sitting in my room and I don't have enough service," which of course wasn't logical at all, right? Because I had so much time to chant. But because I was just sitting around so much, I used this as an excuse for not getting my rounds chanted. And he looked at me. He said, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "I don't know." And he said, I said, "It's very difficult for me." I said, "I'm young And I said, it's very hard just sitting in that servant's quarters all day, which is, that's what I did, except for when I was massaging and cooking and going back and forth, I would sit in a little room. And I said, it's very difficult. And he said, what's so difficult? He said, I'm also sitting here in my room all day. He said, and in the morning, he said, I go for a morning walk. He said, and you come with me. He said, we both go out for the morning walk, so we get our walk in the morning. He said, then we come back. He said, and class is there. He said, so what is the problem? And I just said, Prabhupada, I said, you're like Haridas Thakur, I said. I said, you can sit in one place and chant. I said, but I'm finding it very difficult. He said, I see. He said, so then what do we do? And I said, I don't know, Prabhupada. He said, call Kurandar. I was saying the other day, Kurandar, Prabhupada had so much faith. Kurandar, he could do anything. I remember once when he was going down the stairs into his garden, and he just walked. It was just two steps, concrete steps were there. And he went over the steps one day, and he said, see these stairs? I said, yes. He said, Kurandar made these stairs. He said, he can do anything. So he said, call Kurandar. So he was GBC there on the West Coast and sitting in the headquarters in Los Angeles. And he was very, very grave devotee. Some of you remember he was a little shorter than me. And he looked like what we would say in the U.S., he looked like a Marine. Marine were these rugged, you know, military men. He was like, and always grave, never smiled. Like Maharaj always smiling, except for now. Kurandar never smiled. And we all assumed that that's what it would, you know, to be a devotee, we're always just very grave and weren't doing any nonsense, mischief, just very, very serious and grave all the time when you did your service. And anyway, I went and got Kurandar. And I just said, Prabhupada wants to see you. And we both went up and offered obeisances and got up. And Kurandar just had that look, just looking at Prabhupada, what can I do? You know, what can I do for you? And Prabhupada just looked at him and he said, our Shrutakirti, he said he is having problems chanting his 16 rounds and he says that he doesn't have enough service. He said, so what can we do? And Kurandar just started thinking. You could see he was thinking, deliberating. What could I think? Because he could solve any problem. And he just looked for a minute. And then Prabhupada said, I have an idea. And we all said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, every day, he said, in the morning I get up, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm translating Srimad Bhagavatam here at this desk. He said, dictaphone machine is here. He said, so, can you get another dictaphone machine? Kurandar said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, well, he said, Prabhupada had two sitting rooms in New Dwarka. One was just like the other, but the other one he never used, except for taking massage. There was a skylight in the top, so sometimes he would take massage in there. And sometimes he would do bhajans in there. Many of the bhajans you hear by Prabhupada with him playing harmonium and mridanga were recorded in that room in 1971, 1972, 1973. So he said, you get another dictaphone machine and you can set it up at my desk in that room. He said, and then he said, I'll record Srimad Bhagavatam, I'll translate Srimad Bhagavatam here. He said, and I'll begin translating Chaitanya Charitamrita. He hadn't started translation of Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, so I'll begin translating Chaitanya Charitamrita in that room. And then he looked and he said, Shrutakirti, he said, you know how to type? I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, so each morning you come in and you can pick up the tape, the cassette, not the cassette, the reel, the tape from the dictaphone machine. He said, and then you can do the transcribing of what I do that night. He said, is that all right? I said, yes, Prabhupada. Very nice. He said, so I'll do Srimad Bhagavatam here, I'll do Chaitanya Charitamrita here, He said, Shrutakirti will have some service, so he'll be happy. He said, and he'll chant. He said, so is that all right? And we just both nodded. I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, okay then. He says, so that's all. So he offered obeisances and left. So that night, that morning, early in the morning, Prabhupada got up. He sat down at that desk. The first time he started translating Chaitanya Charitamrita right there. It was in 1973. And that morning I got up and first thing I did when I was get up, I went into the room and I saw there was this tape and Prabhupada had done like one and a half hours of work, the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita on that tape. So I took the tape and I was so excited. I put it in my room and we went on the morning walk. And I was chanting all my rounds feverishly, you know, I was happy and excited and I got all my rounds done and came back and heard class, and then we took prasadam, Prabhupada had his breakfast, and I sat down at the typewriter, and I'm typing away, doing all this. I was so happy and so satisfied. And then, each day I was just chanting my rounds, and everything was fine. Prabhupada just showed me, I was just so amazed that he took all this time just for me. You know, I was just this nobody that was just doing, giving him massage each day. But he sat down and he wanted to know what I needed, and whatever it was, he was willing to do that so that I could be happy and in devotional service. As he would say to me, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. He told me that so many times. Just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. So that then I was chanting Hare Krishna and I was happy. And then after that day, he never went back to that desk and translated any more of Chaitanya Charitamrita. He continued later on, but he didn't do any more there. But it didn't matter because he had taken me and he just put me back up on my sitting place so that I could chant and do my service. And I remained with him then for another year and a half after that. But he just showed so much kindness and it was such a wonderful thing. But Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada did everything, but he did expect that we could do as he was doing as well. That's what he wanted. Like he said, we both go out once a day. We had 1.5 hours we would go out. And he said, you're walking, I'm walking. He said, what is the difference? So, and he did practically, he did everything we were doing. I described his schedule. Prabhupada chanted rounds and said his gayatris. He read his books, just like he would tell us to read his books each day. He would read his books. So he was most compassionate. And he was, again, just like he did after the airport when he spoke to me, I just felt so much love from Prabhupada that I just wanted to serve him. So this is how a pure devotee operates. They just love you so much that you have no alternative but to surrender and to engage in their devotional service, huh? Because they have a genuine love, because they have love for Krishna. So from there, we're going to jump back to Bombay. I was speaking, we were in Bombay yesterday, and at this time, we were staying just nearby here. Prabhupada was staying at Mahadevya's house, Kartikeya Mahadevya's house. And there was one other incident that happened there that was quite funny. And it involved Malati's daughter, who at the time was like 3 years old, three-year-old girl, Saraswati. And Shyamasundar, of course, was Prabhupada's secretary. And Malati, she was also around, and her daughter was there. So they would be around in Prabhupada's quarters very often. And Saraswati, in India, things were much different than they were in America. In America, no one went into Prabhupada's quarters unannounced and without a schedule and without there being a specific darshan. But when Prabhupada went to India, he was very kind to all of his disciples there because India was very austere for his Westerners. And Prabhupada would give darshan sometimes all through the day, and there seemed to be this great openness that he had, that people could just come in and see him. When I first came to Vrindavan, I was just so surprised to see how different everything was in relationship with Prabhupada, how sweet he was, and how he wasn't just always guarded and off bounds from everyone. This is what we were learning in the States, that you couldn't write Prabhupada and you couldn't see Prabhupada in his room. We didn't want to disturb him. We wanted him to be able to do his translating work. But when he arrived in India, none of that seemed to exist anymore, because Prabhupada gave everyone so much personal attention because they were working so hard in India. So Saraswati as well, she would, just a little girl, but she could go in and out of Prabhupada's room anytime she wanted. She would just wander in and play with things on his desk and sometimes sit on his lap when he was there. And then she would just wander back out again, just like a grandchild. You know, she would just be in and out. And she had a tendency, like a little child, she would be eating a lot. And she wasn't, you know, like a child. They're naturally not very clean. You know, they're always just eating, and fingers, hands are in her mouth. But Prabhupada never minded any of these things. Prabhupada loved her very much and had a lot of fun with her and would tease her like a little girl. Prabhupada knew how to tease the children as well. You know, sometimes he would give them something, you know, like when he would give them a cookie and then grab your hand, you know, so he would grab their hand and then try to pull away, and finally he would let go, or he would offer them the cookie, and when they went to get it, he would pull the cookie away and do that several times. So Prabhupada also had rascal in him. So Saraswati, she would come and go, and she would munch on these cookies that they had here in India at the time. I don't know what they were called, the Britannias or some kind of little just sweet cracker thing. And she liked to eat them a lot. And one day I was massaging Prabhupada. And, of course, I was behind Prabhupada. I always was behind Prabhupada, massaging him, it seemed, when things happened. And Saraswati, she just walked in the room, and she's just watching Prabhupada get his massage, just standing there right in front of him, you know, and she's got a cookie just in her mouth, and she's just chewing on her cookie. And I'm rubbing, and she's just standing, and she's eating another cookie, and Prabhupada's just looking at her. And he just starts laughing at her. And she's cookie after cookie, you know. And Prabhupada says, Saraswati, he said, do you know what you remind me of? And she's just this big, you know. And she's going, you know. He said, you remind me of the garbage trucks in New York City. And she just looks like... He says, do you know the garbage trucks in New York City? And she goes, no. So then Prabhupada describes them to her. And he starts saying, in New York, he said, because Prabhupada went to New York, he saw, it's not like here, you know. Maybe here now you have garbage trucks, but in India it's all done by sweeping and hogs. But in New York City, they're big, huge garbage trucks, you know. 4 o'clock in the morning, that's when they go down the street and they start collecting these big baskets of trash and smelly garbage, you know. And so he's telling her, he said, in New York they have these big, big garbage trucks. And he said, every day, he said, they come down the street and there's, you know, men in the back. And the men, they grab these big cans filled with garbage. And he said, and then they throw it in the back of the truck. And these big hydraulic things, you know, you throw it back in there. He said, and then the man grabs a handle and he pulls it down. He said, and then the garbage truck is like this, because he said, and it has a mouth. And he said, when he pulls the handle down, the mouth goes, So I'm massaging Prabhupada. Of course, I stop, and Prabhupada's doing these things, you know, and Saraswati's just looking at him, smiling. And he said, and then after it closes, he said, then they go to the next place. He says, and then the man moves a handle and it goes, Saraswati is looking at him. You know. And then Prabhupada said, "You were just like that garbage truck," he said, "always throwing things in." He said, opening and closing and filling your mouth with garbage. And she just laughed a little, smiled, and continued eating her cookies. And Prabhupada put his head back down, and then he was finished. So, very much he liked the children. So, one experience, of course, the things Prabhupada did were always so nice. And I had mentioned how when Prabhupada told you a story, it was a thing that was so wonderful. When Prabhupada told you a story, he brought you right there. And when he spoke about his childhood, you could just see Prabhupada experiencing his childhood. He could remember things. We were talking about that the other day. Prabhupada had such a memory. Once he told you something, never forgotten. Like he would have these running jokes with me, because I would forget. And 3 years later, he could say something in reference to that, you know, joke. I have one story I can tell you that went on for a very long time. Like 30 years. Into the present, Prabhupada continued to joke. So this is his ability. But it was in right here in Bombay one night when I was massaging Prabhupada. And for prasadam that evening, it was funny, the evening before, Prabhupada had milk and puris and some potato sabji. So the next evening, he said, tonight, he said, make me, he said, I want milk. He said, but I don't want puris and sabji. He said, because this morning, he said, it was difficult for me to get up and do my translation work. He said, so tonight, he said, just make puffies. Puffed rice. Told me how to make puffed rice and peanuts, a little cucumber and masala like that and peanuts. You know. So he said, tonight I'll have, with my hot milk, I'll have puffed rice. He said, because that's easier to digest. He said, so that way it will not interfere with my translation work. So this was here in Bombay. So that's what I made him for his evening meal around 8 o'clock. So after about an hour or so, he rang his bell and said, okay, time for rest. So just like now, Prabhupada used to use a mosquito net in Bombay and Juhu, because mosquitoes were a lot of mosquitoes. And it was very sweet, because then you would put the net around Prabhupada's bed. So then to give him massage, you would have to sit in his bed with him. So that was nicer than sitting next to his bed or kneeling on the floor and giving him massage, because then you were in this tent with Prabhupada, you know, this little mosquito tent. And I would massage his legs and Prabhupada would lay there. But this night was just very, very sweet and very special. And I just started massaging Prabhupada like every evening. And he was just there with his eyes closed. And then he just started talking and he just went on and on. And this is so many stories you know about Prabhupada's childhood. They happened this night because he was lying there and then he had puffed rice for dinner, right? So then he said, when I was a child, said, my mother, she would make puffed rice. She would puff the rice herself. And he said, he said, the process was very simple, he said. She had a big wok. It was a very heavy wok, it was. And in the bottom was some sand. And you get it very, very hot. And then you put the rice in and it would just puff. He said, and then she would take it and shake it through a screen, a sieve, and all the sand would fall through. He said, and then the rice was there. And just still, I'm just massaging and massaging. And then he said, my mother, she was a very expert cook. He said, very good cook. He said, also my sister, he said, she could cook very well. He said, she was, this is the way, he said, in India. He said, Vedic culture. He said, all the women, he said, they would learn, they would watch, they would all work in the kitchen and cook. And then he smiled. He said, I also, he said, can cook very well. He said, I learned how to cook just by watching my mother. He said, not that I was ever in. He said, but simply by watching, he said, I learned how to cook. And then he just continued in his childhood, and he said, when I was a child, he said, life was very nice. He said, my childhood was very nice, he said. Everything was there. He said, I didn't have any wants, you know, not that there was something that wasn't available. He said, whatever we wanted, we had. And he said, my father, he said, we were not from a wealthy family, he said, but my father, he was a merchant, cloth, dealt in cloth. He said, and we had everything in our home. He said, in the summertime, he said, we would have case, big basket full of mangoes. He said, not that we just had a few. He said, a whole basket full of mangoes would be there in the kitchen. He said, and I remember, he said, my sister and I, we would be playing. We'd be outside playing, doing so many things. He said, sometimes, he said, we would go up on the roof and we would fly a kite. He said, I would fly the kite and my sister, she would assist. He said, and I would try to make it and I would tell her, pray to Krishna, make the kite fly. You know, you have to pray to Krishna for the kite to fly, he said. He said, then we would come back down and we would just run around and we would run through the kitchen. And as we ran through the kitchen, we would grab a mango. He said, it's not that we had to ask, can I have a mango? He said, we would just take a mango and we would continue on. He said, so everything was there, very nice. He said, and my father, he said, he always took such good care of us. He says, and sometimes, he said, I would ask my mother for something. He said, I was very fond of puris. He said, when I was a child, I never ate chapatis, only puris. He said, I was very spoiled. I could never take chapati, he said. Not until I was a householder, he said, did I eat chapatis. Only puris, never. That's another story for another time. He told me when he first took chapatis. He said, but as a child, I never ate chapatis. I had puris all the time. He said, and sometimes at nighttime, I would tell my mother, I want puris. And she would say, oh, no, it's too late now. He said, but I'd insist, no, I want puris, because that's what he wanted. He said, I loved puris. And again, she would say, no, I can make you something else. I can make this, I can make that. And I say, no, I want puris. And then he said, my father would say, if he wants puris, you make him puris. He said, perhaps my father knew. That's what he said. And then he just went on. And then he said, when I was a child, so he's just there. Prabhupada was just, he was a child. And he's talking, he's going back 75 years, like it was nothing. And just seeing like on a television or something, you know, it was just going on and on. He could just repeat. He once said he could remember when he was 6 months old. He said, my first memory that I can remember, he said, I was maybe 6 months, he said, and I was in the arms of my mother. And I remember her looking down at me. So, that's, he admitted to remembering that far back. But he said, when I was a child, he said, I had many toys. And he said, and then he started describing, he said, one of my favorite toys. Now all this is just in the mosquito net and the fans on and I'm still rubbing his feet and he's just in bliss. His whole life is blissful. And he said, one of my favorite toys, he said, was a cow. He said, I had one cow, and attached to the cow was a little cord, like a rubber cord, and on the end was a ball. He said, and when you pressed the ball, the cow would jump. And he said, I like that very much. He said, so it was jump, press and jump. And then he said, He said, one time, he said, my mother took me to the market. And when I was in the market, I saw a gun. We went past little toy shops like they have, especially in the villages. You see these little shops filled with all these inexpensive little toys, you know. So he said he saw the guns. So immediately he said, I had to have a gun. As soon as I saw it, he said, I wanted a gun. He said, so he told his mother. And he said, my mother sometimes she would not give me things right away because she would be... His mother was more disciplined than the father. Father said his father, whatever he wanted, his father would do. But his mother sometimes tried to be exercise some discipline. So she said, no, no. And he said, I must have a gun. So finally, he would never relent. So she got him a gun. So of course, then he was very happy, he said, and he had the gun and he put it in his hand and he was holding his gun. And then he looked at his other hand and he said, and I had to have another gun because I wanted one gun for each hand. So again, told his mother, I have to have a gun, another gun. And my mother, she said, no, you have a gun, that's enough. And he insisted, I must have another gun. And she insisted, you cannot. He said, and at that time, he said, I laid down on the ground and started banging my hands and my head on the ground, crying, he said, I must have a gun. He said, you see this scar? And he lifted his hand and pointed to his head. He had a little scar. He said, this scar is from that time. Prabhupada was a little boy. You can see the determination Prabhupada had at that time. It was this determination later on. Prabhupada started this Krishna consciousness movement. So that determination was there. He wanted his weapons. So his scars. So he showed me his scars, how he got his scars. So finally, she had no choice, and she got him. So then he was very happy. He had two guns. And then he stopped, and I just kept massaging his legs, his feet, rubbing his feet. And then he said, when I was young, he said, I was going to school. He said, just a little boy. He said, one thing I had, he said, I loved very, very much, he said, was a pair of shoes that my father got me. He said, they were very special. He said, they were from England. And he said, at the time they cost, I don't know how much, maybe it was like 10, 15 rupees. This was like in 1905 or something, you know. So he said, I like these shoes very much. And he said they were leather from England. It was English shoes. They were imported from England. He said, I wanted them, and my father bought them for me. He said, and I used to wear them to school every day. He said, I was very fond of them. So I told you I never asked Prabhupada. You're getting to hear all the questions I ask Prabhupada. That's how many I ask. So I'm just massaging, and I just tried to imagine Prabhupada. It was hard for me, but he made it easier when he talked about things. So I was just trying to imagine Prabhupada in his pair of shoes walking to school. And I'm massaging, and I said, Prabhupada, I said, when you walked to school in your shoes, I said, did you used to watch them as you were walking? And he started, yes, he said, I would watch them. He said, I would look at them. He said, very much I liked my shoes, he said. So these were, as I said, all so many nice services I had. But of all my services, this was my most fond service, was massaging Prabhupada in the evening, because I knew I was alone with Prabhupada. No one else would ever come into Prabhupada's room at this time. This was Prabhupada's special time. Any time someone might come in, but at this time, I knew it was just me in there. So I felt so special, so fortunate to have that time with Prabhupada. And I would just think, he's just talking to me. Like, he doesn't have to say anything and yet he's talking. So then you just would love Prabhupada more to see that he's sharing these things, these intimate times, and he was sharing them. So I was so happy. Was there any more at that time, Amekkala? Do you know? There's another very nice nighttime story. We'll tell that tomorrow. We'll save that because that comes later on. So we'll tell that tomorrow. It's one of my favorite stories as well. And I'm sure everyone will like it. But from there, so that was some of the things that Prabhupada spoke about right here where you live. So a very special place. You have to always remember. Maharaj was telling me that, you know, Prabhupada did one program. I'm sure he's mentioned it here. One program, just 1 minute walk away. And he walked out and said, we should have a temple here, you know. Just pointing right here. So it's by Prabhupada's desire. Prabhupada planted so many seeds. You're all coming from Prabhupada's planting seeds. So many, everyone coming here. Just like in Russia, Prabhupada spent just a few days. Everything that's happening there is because Prabhupada stepped on that soil there and gave Krishna consciousness, the one soul, you know. And so many things transpired from that. So you can just see, as I travel around now, that's what I see, is the effect Srila Prabhupada has had on the entire world. And it's just going to continue and grow as time goes on. So then, after Prabhupada left here, he stopped in Calcutta for 1 week. And then he went on to New Zealand. Went on to New Zealand and then Australia. So Calcutta, that was, of course, another such an amazing place. Because Calcutta was, that was Prabhupada's birthplace. So I thought Prabhupada was very relaxed when he came to India. You could really get the idea that Prabhupada came home when Prabhupada came to India. It's very comfortable. But then when Prabhupada got to Calcutta, that was a whole another level of seeing Srila Prabhupada and how he had, like, home. He was in his home. He was in his city. And people would just come and visit him, and he would sit and talk with them and in Bengali so much of the time, but he would just chat with old friends. And again, people were free a lot to come in and out of his room. And Prabhupada would just sit back on his asana there, and it was very hot, you know, and humid in Calcutta. And he would just have his dhoti on and Brahmin thread. And you would see when Prabhupada put tilak on, sometimes he would put very big ones. He would right up his arm. He would start here, put the big, and then it'd go right up with this one big line. You know, so you would see his tilak going up his arms, and he would just sit back at home, and it was just so wonderful to see Prabhupada so relaxed. And then his sister would come and see him. It was the first time I got to see Prabhupada's sister when we arrived in Calcutta. And that was another whole experience, because she looked so much like Prabhupada. And she had these black, dark glasses, and she was shorter, and she was much heavier than Prabhupada. But she was just like Prabhupada's sister. And she was such an amazing devotee, because she just loved Prabhupada so much. Naturally, you know, the affection, the love that we were gradually developing, she had all this from her childhood. She just loved Prabhupada more than anything, and as all she wanted to do was be near Prabhupada. She didn't care if he was speaking Hindi, Bengali, English. If she could be there, she was happy. She would just sit by him. And she would come to the temple. She didn't have anything, you know, but she would come and she would always bring sweets that she would get at the local sweet shop. Very nice sweets. Prabhupada loved Bengali sweets so much. Sandesh, Rasgulla, Rasmalai, so many kinds of Sandesh. Chocolate Sandesh. I have to get that in sometimes. A chocolate Sandesh she would bring, and we would take and distribute. Prabhupada would distribute all these things. And I remember, of course, I like sweets very much. And we called her Pishima, which meant auntie, right? Auntie Pishima. Her name was Babatarini. And there are long stories about her. I'll try to just tell a few things. I mean, she loved to cook for Prabhupada. And in the temple, of course, you know, we only had ghee in the temple. We never had oil. We never cooked in oil. And Prabhupada trained us up. We always used ghee. So there in the temple in Calcutta also, there was just ghee in the temple. But she would come in, and she only wore just a white sari, you know, it was like 10 yards of cloth. It was just wrapped around. It seemed like it went around and around and around her, you know, and then over her head and back around and around. And she would smuggle in a bottle of mustard oil, just like a small bottle. And she would tuck it into her sari so she could cook with mustard oil for Prabhupada, because we didn't have, and we wouldn't use mustard oil because Prabhupada said, he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he asked him, he said, Prabhupada, you know, don't you say that ghee is for the outside of the body, or ghee is for the inside and oil is for the outside? And Prabhupada said, yes, that's right. He said, then why? He said, in Bengal, he said, everybody, they cook in mustard oil. And Prabhupada said, it's very tasty. So she would bring this mustard oil in, and then she would cook for Prabhupada. And we, you know, we were always afraid to bring these things to Prabhupada, because he would say, give me this, give me this. And so anyway, she would insist. She loved everybody so much, but me, she had a little hard time with, because I thought I was trying to protect Prabhupada. Sometimes I wouldn't even let her in the room. Prabhupada would be resting, and she would want to go in his room, and I'd say, no, he's resting, and give me a dirty look, you know, like, or Prabhupada, she would say, Prabhupada, you know, and I'd say, he's resting, you know. So now I was also, she would give these things, and I would bring them in to Prabhupada with his lunch, with his regular lunch that he had. And Prabhupada would eat them, you know. She would make shukta. She would make so many preparations and mustard oil and fried kachuris fried in mustard oil. So Prabhupada would eat the shukta and he'd eat the kachuris, and he would eat a little bit of his chapatis and rice and dal. And so he did that. And after 2 days, he called me in his room. And he said, my sister, he said, she's cooking me all these things. He said, I cannot eat them. He said, I cannot digest. He said, when she cooks, he said, you eat it. Now, I had already had jaundice. I had malaria. I don't know what else I had, but I was always sick. And I said, I can't eat it, Prabhupada. I can't eat what she's cooking. He said, you just give it away to whoever you want. He said, but don't bring it in here. He said, I can't eat it. He said, she's trying to kill me. And he said, she is poisoning me. Prabhupada, use that word. He said, she's trying to poison me. He said, you eat it, you distribute it. He said, but I don't want it. So I was laughing. I said, I'm not eating it. I said, but I'll do something with it, Prabhupada. So she would cook, and I would actually have to take it and then distribute it to the devotees later on. But when we would tell her, she would become very angry. And she said, Prabhupada, he can digest nails if he wants. She knew Prabhupada, he was completely transcendental. And whatever she gave him, Prabhupada, he could digest. He said, even nails, she said, he can digest. So these sweets she would bring in. And, you know, just like in India, nice, wonderful, juicy. I'd love them so much, the Sandesh and Rasgullas, you know. And they would sit by Prabhupada's desk, And one day there were ants all over the sweets. They had come into the room and they found their way to the box and they were all over. So of course right away I just went into the room and I grabbed the box of sweets and I said, oh, so I thought I would just take them out and wash them all off and eat them. So I said to Prabhupada, oh Prabhupada, I said, these sweets, I said, they're covered with ants. I said, they're, you know, no good. And Prabhupada said, that's okay. He said, they don't eat very much. He said, it's okay. And he knew I just wanted, I was so transparent. Like, you know, the spiritual masters, well, I was very transparent. You could see I was just lusting after these sweets. So he just laughed at me and said, they don't eat very much. And then he said, you get one tali. He said, and you fill the tali up with water. He said, then you stick a katori on in the middle, upside down. He said, and then you can put the sweets on top of the katori. He said, then no ants will get to them. He said, then it's okay. So then I did that. But I didn't get to eat the sweets. She would bring in a misty dahi. It was the first time I had. She would bring big, you know, containers. And then everything was clay pots. Like now, everyone eats off this plastic, all this nonsense you eat off of now in India. But then you only ate off leaf plates. You drank every cup of water you had was in a nice little clay cup. You know, we had little katori, clay katoris back then. And once and throw away, you know, Vedic style, and just go in and would recycle automatically. But now it's all plastic bags everywhere in this country. So, again, that's advancement of civilization. But do we have time for a little more? So just a little more about his sister. Because it was the funniest. Was she was so wonderful. And Prabhupada loved her very, very much. And she loved Prabhupada so much that they said, and Prabhupada said, even in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, I am a sannyasi, he said. In Vrindavan, Prabhupada was very, very strict. He said, even my sister, he said, I cannot be with her alone. He said, if my sister comes into the room, he said, you must be here. He said, and not that she can just come in and do as she pleases. He says, I'm a sannyasi, he would say. But in Calcutta, he would give her lots of freedom. She would be so happy. Whenever she sat by Prabhupada, she'd just smile, this big smile. So the one day, it's late morning, and I'm massaging Prabhupada. And he starts laughing. And he said, do you know anyone? He said, do you have any experience of anyone who has become fat without eating? And I just started laughing. I said, no, Prabhupada. And right away I knew where it was going. I said, no, Prabhupada. He said, it's not possible, is it? He said, is it possible to become fat without eating? I said, no, Prabhupada. I said, it's not possible. He said, no. He said, I don't think so either. He said, but my sister, she tells me that she's ill. And I told her, you're ill because you're eating too much. You're fat and you're eating too much. He said, therefore you're sick. He said, but she tells me that she doesn't eat hardly anything. And she's sick and she's heavy. He said, how is it possible? He said, I told her it's not possible to become fat unless you eat so much. He said, I've told her this, but she tells me she doesn't feel good, but she's only eating a little bit. So he's laughing and I'm laughing. He said, but she's so fat. He said, therefore I know she's eating very much. He said, otherwise it's not possible to become fat. So he's just laughing and massaging Prabhupada. Then he stops. So then massage goes on and finishes. So down in every evening, Prabhupada has a darshan in his room, just around 6-7 o'clock. And all the devotees, they would come in, sit down. And Calcutta, it was very nice. Just atmosphere was so nice. Prabhupada would just lay back and talk, and sit and chant, whatever. But he would just give everyone so much of his association. And he was reciprocating. They were doing so much. Devotees were working so hard. The Calcutta temple was not an easy place to stay at. Calcutta was not an easy city. And the temple was very difficult. Facilities were very difficult for men and women. I think the women had to go through the men's quarters to get to their quarters. It was a very bizarre situation. Anyway, Prabhupada's sitting and he's talking with the devotees. And after a little while, his sister arrived. And she walks into Prabhupada's room, sitting room. And she, just like all of us, she offers full obeisances to Prabhupada. And she gets up and she sits down. And then Prabhupada starts talking, and he's talking in English, of course. He's talking, well, we're all Americans and Europeans, so he's just speaking in English to everyone. And he said, oh, my sister has come. And he says, just see how fat she is. And everybody was shocked, you know. I mean, it was, I had heard it in the afternoon, and I was surprised he was saying it. He said, she is so fat, my sister. And then he went on and starts describing the whole thing again to all of his disciples in the room. And everyone is rolling around laughing and crying in the room as Prabhupada's saying, he said, she's eating so much, he said. And she's laughing too. And she doesn't understand a word, but she just sees Prabhupada laughing, everyone's laughing. So she was also happy and she's laughing. So as I said, Prabhupada was a rascal. So now he was really being a rascal because he was making fun of his little sister in front of everyone and saying she eats so much and she says she's not eating anything. So he's telling everyone the same story he told me. So they're hysterical laughing, having so much fun. And Prabhupada's laughing because he knew he was what he was doing, you know. So he's laughing more than everyone. And he's Prabhupada, when he would laugh, when he would really laugh, he would slap his knee, you know. He's just laughing and laughing. And Pishima's laughing, and I'm like, oh, you know. And so it just went on in that way. And then Prabhupada stopped. But he had a very special relationship, as I said. Prabhupada loved her so much. And there are all other stories in Vrindavan as well. Maybe we'll tomorrow or something we'll tell some more stories about that. But it was one of Prabhupada's more rascal, very sweet times that he shared with us. So this was Calcutta, a very special place. And Prabhupada would think so many things. So we have time for maybe one or two questions, and then we'll finish. Yadubara Prabhu.
Certainly that aspect of Srila Prabhupada being very comfortable in Calcutta, because that's his home. I was in his room one time and he gave me a little different perspective on that. And he turned to me and he said, I don't like to come here. And then he said, because of this. Pinching his arm and indicating the bodily relationships. I don't want to spoil the fun.
He
but
pinching his skin disease is probably what
yes,
we call it.
Skin huh? disease.
Yes. Well, that was, I said, Prabhupada had one, was his secretary for the time at this same time. And he was a householder. Prabhupada had given him sannyas just many months before. And he was, they even expressed to me, and I was very surprised that how attached he was to his ex-wife, his wife, when he had taken sannyas. And he was feeling such attachment. He said he could feel it physically. He said it was hurting him. He said he could feel it in his stomach, in the pit of his stomach. He said in his heart, he could feel this attachment. He was telling me this. And in Calcutta, he went in Prabhupada's room. I was sitting there again, and he was speaking, and he told Prabhupada these things. He was very honest and open, and he was saying how much he was struggling to Prabhupada and how attached he was thinking of his wife so often. And he said how difficult it was. And Prabhupada just looked at him. He said, yes. He said, just last night I had a dream about my wife. He said, the attachment is so strong, he said. So for whatever reason, said maybe because he was in Calcutta, maybe he did have a dream, maybe he didn't, I don't know. But he said that to him, to say, attachment, these things. When we would say these things to Prabhupada, how we were experiencing something. Like I mentioned yesterday, he said to Nanda Kumar, I also have a tongue. You know, like, I also have senses, I have all these things. So when we would say something, Prabhupada said, yes, I understand, you know, I have ears, I see. When someone said to him in Vrindavan, when I first became his servant, someone said, how do we control the mind? When to chant, like we have to control the mind so we can chant and hear. How do we control the mind so that we can hear properly? And Prabhupada said, there's no question of mind. He said, you chant and you hear. That's all. It was so simple. And when he says it, it sounds, yes, there's no question of mind. You just chant and you hear. Where is their mind? He said, chant and hear. So he would just say these things. And when people would come in, I said, oh, you would come in with a big difficulty. And Prabhupada never, you can read letter after letter Prabhupada would send. He never offered a material solution. Because even you saw, even if he could, maybe there is material solutions. But it never cuts, right? The solution is, Yadavar said, the skin. The problem is the skin disease. We think there was were this body. So there's really only one solution. It's chant Hare Krishna and do devotional service. Follow the regulative principles. And you'll see over and over again, Prabhupada would tell us the same thing. You just chant your rounds nicely. You serve the deities. You do book distribution. He would always say what to do. Engage in devotional service. Follow this process. And everything will be fine. You know? He never gave some mundane solution to anything. Once at the manor, these two women came in and they were telling Prabhupada that they had ghosts in their house. And they wanted to know if there was some special ritual they could do. And then Prabhupada told them, yeah, when I was a householder in Delhi, he said, I bought one house very cheap because it was possessed by ghosts. He said, so I got it very cheap. He said, and I would sit there and in my chair and I would see things moving around. He said, they would be moving things around, he said, and I would just sit and chant. He said, and finally they left. He said, so you chant Hare Krishna. That was it. That was always the solution. So we should stop here. Who's in charge? Maharaj? No? We go on? Okay. So, we could go on with a little bit about Pishima just because it's in the train of thought, or I could go to Auckland, New Zealand. And we'll just stay with Pishima since we'll devote a little more time to her. Again, we know even at the end, Prabhupada asked forgiveness from his sister in his final days, even if he said it was a little harsh. I'm not sure the exact words, but even he asked forgiveness from his sister. He said if he had done anything, created inconvenience for her. So, after Calcutta, and the next time I really had, that I got to see Pishima was in Vrindavan. And that was in 1975. And she was there as well for the opening of the temple. And Prabhupada was in his quarters by this time at Krishna Balaram Mandir. And I remember again, she would, you know, by that time also, you would always try to keep, like in Calcutta, I used to lie down in front of Prabhupada's doors. He had like French doors, two doors that would open out from his room. And when he took rest in the afternoon, I would sit in front of the doors. Or if I took a nap, I would lie down in front of those doors so he wouldn't be disturbed. And at nighttime, I slept right on the floor, right in front of his doors. This was before we had official guards, Prabhupada's guards. So I would lie down in front of his doors. And it was in Calcutta was the first time I did it. And I remember I was about to lie down and Prabhupada was going to take a nap. And he called me in and he said, does your nose work? And I said, huh, what? He said, does your nose work? I said, yes, it works, bro, but it works okay. He said, do you snore? I said, oh, no. I said, I don't think so. He said, because if you snore, he said, you can't lie out there. I said, no. I said, I don't think. He said, okay, then it's okay. He said, you can lie there. So this was part of my service, was to keep people from going in to see Prabhupada. So in Vrindavan, it was by 75 also, there's so many things going on, and you know, we would try. So even Prabhupada's sister, again in Vrindavan, Prabhupada had another way he acted, because it was Vrindavan, and Krishna Balaram Mandir was very, very important that everyone saw this was a bona fide temple here in Vrindavan, not just some nonsense temple. It was opened by Westerners, and the standard had to be first class. And that's why, of course, he instituted, it's like in America, his best pujaris, they were ladies. His first pujari, Shilavati, Prabhupada said she was expert pujari, taking care of Rukmini Dwarkadish, so many nice things. But in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, women, the Matajis, he said they could do service, but behind, they were making the clothes, they could make the garlands, they could do so many things, he said. But on the altar, he said, it had to be pukka, male Vaishnavas. He said, otherwise, he said, we'll have no respect here. He said, so for the benefit of everyone coming, it was necessary to institute that standard in Vrindavan. So again, with his sister, his personal standard was, he was very careful, even though it was his sister. He didn't want that she could freely just do as she pleased, because he was a sannyasi. So he was very careful how he did things. So one day when Prabhupada took prasadam and then he was in his room and he took rest, I went into the servants' quarters, which at that time was just behind Prabhupada's room. It was actually in between Prabhupada's sitting room and his bathroom. There was a small room, which now is just part of Prabhupada's quarters. Things are on display in there. But when I was there in 74 and 75, it's where I stayed and where I slept and where I ate. It's where I did everything. So after Prabhupada went into his room and he laid down, I went into my room. And when I went into my room, Prabhupada's sister was sleeping on my bed. I walked in and she's just sound asleep, this little, and she's asleep there. So I, you know, naturally got, and I just left the room. So then later on, I went into Prabhupada's room and I said, Prabhupada, I said, your sister's sleeping in my bed. And he said, oh, and I said, no. He said, she cannot be doing these things, he said. He said, this is Vrindavan. He said, this cannot go on. He said, tell her she cannot do this. And I looked, I said, Prabhupada, I said, I cannot tell your sister anything. I said, she doesn't like me already. I said, and neither do I know how to speak Bengali. He said, okay. He said, I'll tell her. He said, you bring her in here. He said, I'll speak with her. So I went, and she was still, I went and I tapped her, you know. I said, Prabhupada wants to see you. And big smile on her face, because that's all she wanted was to sit by Prabhupada. She didn't want anything else. So she was happy. She was there because she was waiting to see Prabhupada. So she went in and And the three of us are sitting in there, and Prabhupada's talking, and she's talking, and it's all in Bengali, so I don't know what's going on. So talking went on for some time, and then Prabhupada looked at me and said, okay, he said, no problem. He said, everything is taken care of. And I said, thank you, Prabhupada. You know, and then we both left. So then they went on, everything was fine. So the next day, of course, the exact same thing happened. Prabhupada's resting. I go into my room and Pishima's sound asleep on my bed. So I just shrugged my shoulders and left, and I never said anything. I figured it was I was just to go sleep anywhere. I could sit anywhere. So I didn't bother anymore. But she was happy. Prabhupada was okay. So they were some of my little experiences with Prabhupada's sister. So I think we should stop here. Yes, Maharaj. Yes. So tomorrow morning we can continue, and I think it'll be the last day I'll be speaking. I'll be here Sunday and leave very early Monday morning. But Sunday is a big program, and Rath Yatra and the feast, so we'll see what happens. But tomorrow I'll speak, and I'll tell that other very nice story about Prabhupada speaking in his bedroom and some other things. Very sweet, about Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's mercy Prabhupada has given us so nicely. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.